When I was in high school, I met with a college counselor for help thinking about college applications. He was a friend of my stepdad's. He sat across from me and we talked, alone together in a living room. He asked me to start by telling him what I thought my strengths were. It's a pretty typical question during college application time, but it makes most people a little nervous, right? Given that we have a hard time boasting about ourselves. I shyly responded that I worked hard in school and in sports. I was on the varsity volleyball and basketball teams and made all A's. I was able to be friends with all kinds of people. I was fluent in Spanish and loved languages. But as I spoke, I became more nervous because he was smiling at me in a kind of coy way, as if he had a secret. When I finished speaking, he kept smiling, paused, and then said, "Well, Emily, you've forgotten something very important. You are also very beautiful." This is my tamest story. You've most likely heard of the Me Too movement. The movement actually began over a decade ago as a way for sexual assault and harassment survivors to find solidarity and healing. In the last few months, you've probably witnessed as the stories of so many women have finally not only been allowed airtime, but even been believed, at least by some. Finally, there is space, air, for women to tell their stories. When the Me Too movement exploded on social media, friends and acquaintances I hadn't talked to in decades started messaging me, saying, "I saw your Me Too. Here's mine. Did you know about this?" The Me Too movement reopened wounds for some, most women. Some have had to stay away from the news for a time, so as not to trigger old pains they could not abide. The movement has sent some or most or all, perhaps, women and some men and gender nonconforming people into the basements of their memories as we unearthed and cataloged all of the times of unwanted touch and repeated innuendo. Many women have hesitated to publicly say, "Me too," even on social media. For those with blatant histories of rape and abuse, the hesitation is about the very real fear of retribution. For those with less blatant but still very harmful histories, there is also often hesitation. It is as if we all know viscerally that yes, me too. But because of the way women who speak up on this issue are questioned and threatened, we know that if we say "me too," even in a tiny Facebook post, we need to be ready to respond to the critique. So women everywhere started cataloging their experiences, wondering which kind of harassment and abuse they experienced was worse. Sometimes women were even asking each other, "Does this story count? If it's not rape, does it count?" And then we said to one another, "What an awful thing to be asking each other if it counts." We told each other, "Yes, yes, that's awful. That counts." When I ministered as a college chaplain, I can't count the number of times young women came to my office to break open with their story of a recent or long ago sexual assault. It began to make sense to simply assume that almost all of the young women at the college had experienced some kind of sexual abuse in their young lifetime or tragically soon would. If you move through the world as a woman or a gender nonconforming person, chances are that you have experienced some of this. And chances are you have been taught or told to be quiet, to get a sense of humor, or to accept that you are somehow to blame for what happened. It's not a coincidence that it has taken the stories of celebrities to finally break through to this moment. We value the stories of our celebrities in the U.S. far more than the stories of the farm worker, or the hotel maid, or the secretary, or even the CEO. Celebrities are more likely to be believed and less likely to face poverty or death after telling their story. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say it's also not a coincidence that it's been mostly white women who have been believed. Our country, in fact, has a shameful history of believing the stories of white women over the stories of people of color. Decades ago, when a white woman said a black boy or man looked at her the wrong way, she was believed and he was lynched. Just this year, 60 years after she claimed that 14-year-old Emmett Till was sexually crude toward her and he was brutally murdered, the woman who accused him admitted it was not true. Sexism and racism are inextricably intertwined in our culture. The reason white women were believed in the Jim Crow days is because white women were seen as the property of white men. Black men even daring to go near white women was an affront to the power system. Sexism and racism are intertwined. Many have pointed out that Tarana Burke, the black woman who founded the Me Too movement, was not included on the cover of Time magazine last week when Time made the Me Too women their person of the year. White actresses and supposed feminists in the show Girls came out to defend their writer when he was accused by a woman of color for sexual assault. And when the wave of claims kept descending on Harvey Weinstein, he didn't break his silence to defend himself until black actress Lupita Nyong'o told her story. As many have pointed out, of all the women, he chose her to publicly discredit. And many women of color have pointed out that our president, who was caught on tape bragging in vile terms about sexual assault, was elected by a majority of white women. And as was painfully clear in our service a few weeks ago for Transgender Day of Remembrance, transgender women of color receive the worst of it. In a culture where white supremacy and toxic masculinity are the air we breathe, to be a person of color and resist gender norms puts you right in the crosshairs of the worst of our culture. So we hear the statistics about the number of women raped each year and the number of women experiencing domestic abuse. We see the rape whistles on the market and the articles about how to best protect yourself from an assault. I remember taking a self-defense class for girls at my school. We spend so much energy in our culture telling women how not to get assaulted. At what point do we start teaching boys and men how not to assault? Where are the statistics about the number of men who rape each year? Where are the classes for boys about consent? This Me Too movement has gained steam because we are finally talking about the people, almost always men, on the other side of these stories. And many of these men are finally having to face real consequences, sometimes after lifetimes of abusing women. So this is hard stuff, right? And stuff our culture doesn't want us to think about. And so often defenses arise within us, such as, well, not all men, and, but some women lie about it, and it's not just women who are assaulted, and, but that man is a good man. While all true, these defenses distract us from the bigger and truer reality. The response to all of these defenses is to see sexism and toxic masculinity in the same way we see racism and white supremacy. It's the air we breathe. It's in our conscious and unconscious behaviors. This is on all of us. And so the cure is in all of us as well. The researcher Rachel Yehuda has studied trauma and found that effects of racism and sexism live at the cellular level and get passed down at the cellular level through the generations. But the good news is that she found it is not fixed. Therapy produced cellular changes in trauma survivors. So the good news is we do not have to be defined by what happened to us. We can define ourselves by the ways we have survived, by our courage in telling our stories, by all we have done despite what happened. And we as a culture do not have to be defined by this. If we do something about it, we do not have to continue to be a culture of toxic masculinity, where boys learn that girls want to be overpowered, where boys learn that to be a successful man means getting your way whenever and however and having whatever you want. We do not have to continue to be a society where locker room talk is acceptable, where boys are taught don't cry, where male loneliness is an epidemic, where some men take to assault rifles and mass shootings to feel powerful. If we do something about it, we can shift into a culture where both women and men and everyone will be gentle, where both women and men and everyone will be strong. For while some people bemoan the loss of Al Franken's and others' careers, what is a true tragedy is the loss of what the women in our culture can be if they didn't have to live in this culture of sexual assault and silencing. As the New York Times op-ed writer Lindy West has written, for every story told, we must remember there are also invisible ripples of confidence lost, jobs quit, careers stalled, women's influence diminished, men's power entrenched. Likewise, the writer Rebecca Solnit asks, what would women's lives be like? What would our roles and accomplishments be? What would our world be without this terrible punishment that looms over our daily lives? I often think about the human genius, creativity, and variety that gets crushed before it's even in bud, because a girl was groomed and raped and never believed, because a black boy was enslaved, because a person who looked and acted different was disappeared, because a boy was taught don't cry, because a high schooler sitting across from a college counselor was told that her beauty was all that mattered. We talk in Unitarian Universalism and in this church about our vision of the beloved community. And this is what that vision is about a world where all of our inherent worth and dignity, all of our marvelous variety and beauty, all of our diverse gifts and potential are given air to breathe, nourishing love and the gifts of supportive community. Imagine that world. That is our vision. So what do? We listen to the stories at the margins. If we are men, especially the stories of women and gender nonconforming people. If we are white, especially the stories of people of color. What do? We start healing the toxic masculinity around us. We teach our boys it's okay to have feelings. When we see a girl, we don't always say, what a pretty dress. We give space to our men to feel. We stop interrupting women when they talk. We teach consent. We heal our culture's association of sexuality with power. We let vulnerability, courage, and realness be sexy. We let consent be sexy. We teach consent to our children. That's why I tell my family members that they must ask my daughter's permission to tickle her or kiss her. To some, they say, well, that's just silly, but it's all part of it. That's why, especially if I don't know you, I always try to ask before I hug you. So what do? We say, me too. We tell our stories and we trust that they count. We listen. We hope and we work for a world in which we can stop counting the numbers. We gain strength from one another's courage. And so as part of that effort of gaining strength from our courage, we'll now shift into that ritual of healing and solidarity.